This is the Ontology Summit. It's section 4 on the two engineering tracks, and the date is February the 2nd, and I'm Henson Graves, the session moderator. And so I will go to a couple of introductory tracks and then turn it over to the speakers. So, Charles?
What's up?
Okay. Well, I just want to recall that the summit goal is really to foster communication between the ontology community and the various systems community, in this case in particular, the system engineering community. Next chart. What you see on that chart is two lists, and the one on the left is what we started with as the topic areas that we thought made sense for engineering. You'll find those on the website. I'm not going to go through them. And what is on the right is what seem to be at least some of the emerging threads. And that's where we're going to talk about after the speakers, because what our goal is today is to sort of triage these threads and possibly identify champions for the ones that we keep to actually collect and organize the material on those particular threads. So that's, I think that's really all I want to say, because after the speakers, we'll come back and look at the threads again and use that. I have a couple more charts. And we'll use that as a jumping off point for the discussion. So during the presentations, again, please keep for these speakers, please try to keep to the 10 minutes. We want the questions then. And I think you should think about your presentation as an extended elevator speech. You can get people to read the charts later. But just sort of introduce what it is you're really talking about and thinking about. So we'll take our first speaker, and I believe that's Leo.
Yes, hi, folks. You can hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, good. What I'd like to do is talk very briefly about semantic interoperability, at least a couple aspects of it. Slide 2. Semantic integration implies semantic composition. I just want to underscore that, you know, this is from a software engineering system point of view. It doesn't include human in the loop so much at this point. But the way we've evolved kind of through time is increasing the complexity of how we interact with our systems. We no longer have procedure calls, or at least they're not, that we still have procedure calls, but it's not just procedure calls. And so basically as we've evolved, you know, up through CORBA, Java Bean Objects, kind of web services, we have to deal with more and more complex semantic interaction, and languages that we've used have had to increase in complexity too, including the, of course, the arrival of ontologies and semantic technologies. Next slide is 3. Identify a couple dimensions of interoperability and integration. I'm focusing on 3 kinds of integration here, syntactic, structural, semantic, but 6 levels of interoperability as juxtaposed or scaled against that. So in other words, from data to the community, and it gets a little ambiguous when you talk about enterprise and community, because they may be kind of recursive. You may have an enterprise that's a part of a community, and that community is part of a larger enterprise, and so forth. But when we talk about systems of systems, we're basically moving much more towards the semantic side in our terms of our interoperability, simply because our systems and our data are so heterogeneous by that point that we need to focus on explicit semantics. Next slide. 4. There's a lot of definitions of interoperability and integration. That's why I prepared that slide previously. But what I'd like to suggest is that interoperate is to participate in a common purpose. So the operation, whatever it is, and it doesn't have to be software operation, sets the context. And, of course, the purpose is the intention, the end to which the activity, whatever it is directed. Hence, interoperation or interoperability has to increase in terms of semantic interpretation over time simply because of the degrees of interactions we have to deal with, and necessarily our systems have to keep ahead of that themselves. So semantics is fundamentally interpretation. We deal with it in terms of ontologies. They represent, in effect, the semantics of specific domains we're interested in. And, of course, it's within a particular context and from a particular point of view. So one person's semantics and one set of ontologies have to, over time, interact with others, other ontologies. So semantic interoperability and integration, it's really fundamentally driven by the purpose of the communication, the interaction. So participants determine by interpreting capacity to meet these operational objectives. When you build a system or a system of systems in your community and larger trans communities, you have to be focused on what you need to accomplish. And, of course, this requires service obligations and responsibilities being explicitly contracted. Next slide is five, enabling semantic interoperability. There's a range of things that are necessary, and by no means is this exhaustive. Establishing a base semantic representation via ontologies, not just one ontology, but interlinked ontologies. And the way you interlink those, of course, is to either use common foundational or upper and middle ontologies, as the case may be when you need to span domains, or you need mappings, semantic mappings and transformations. And in reality, you probably need both. And these mappings really should be considered integration ontologies, if you will. So they're individual theories, just like ontologies, except they pull together ontologies. And of course, algorithms. Now, we've had a lot of discussion about that, and I won't, you know, go down the rabbit hole. But I suggest that in our far-flung systems, especially when they exist already and the data that's already at hand, you may have to define algorithms that kind of figure out semantic similarity using the ontologies, but also, you know, establishing what those local semantics is kind of in a bootstrapping fashion to enable some sort of semantic mapping facility. The use of ontologies and mapping software can reduce, really, the loss of semantics and information exchange among various kinds of heterogeneous applications. So we're probably more interested in complex systems of systems, but, you know, when you view e-commerce and e-business, they are really systems of systems themselves. It's hardly ever that the case that one company controls everything and it's one system that rules them all. Typically, you require more and more systems of systems. And, of course, for integrated collective intelligence, decision-making, decision support, you need systems and data that interact semantically. Okay, next slide is six. So what's required when you have multiple semantics, and we can kind of unpack that a little bit, you have multiple contexts, views. Both application users' perspectives, and, you know, this is in fact recursive, because you may have different applications at different levels and users that maybe span multiple levels. You require multiple levels of precision. In other words, how precise do you need your system and data and the semantics for it at a particular level? when you're doing search, for example, in a search application, you may just need something equivalent to a thesaurus to enable you to have synonyms for your terms. There's multiple levels of verisimilitude that's required in your ontologies, too. Depending upon the degree of precision that's required, the fidelity, the granularity, and another aspect is, you know, how dynamic are things? Is your ontology changing constantly or just your instances? And, you know, what's the level that's required for you to operate at your system level or your system of systems? And, of course, there's multiple kinds of semantic mappings and transformation. So everything between your classes and relations, properties, ontologies of ontologies, modules of ontologies, maybe namespaces, levels of ontologies, and of course properties of properties and things that we're dealing with every day, units of measure, conversions, and of course more abstractly, theories and their interpretations. And obviously, upper and middle ontologies are important, and they become more and more important in order to interrelate domain ontologies. If we look at slide 7, just a very simple case, and this is a cartoon, basically, but it's an electronic commerce example, right? You may have one company, and maybe you have many systems, and roughly you have a common model for those systems. That may drive your enterprise. The next slide is slide 8. Now, multiply that by all these companies that have to deal with electronic commerce and electronic business and interoperate and preserve their semantics. So, you know, this is a mapping nightmare, if you will, this is what drives kind of the emergence of domain theories crossing specific areas such as commerce and specific kinds of commerce to build up this common semantics. So, and of course, you try doing this without ontologies. You can, and we have up to this point, but really it's a nightmare, and it's a very expensive nightmare. Next slide is slide 9. We're almost finished. Currently, we suggest that there's a lot of technologies that systems engineering, information technology in general, uses today that really doesn't address these issues interoperability adequately. So, you know, we may look at our service-oriented architecture or, you know, our database technology, columnar, big data, or MapReduce, big data, Hadoop, you know, cloud level addressing of big data, programming technology, object-oriented, genetic programming, swarm kind of life agents, if you will, bottom-up agents. And, of course, as I mentioned, parallel distributed technologies can't address these in by themselves. They address other issues, other problems. They have to be wedded to ontologies and semantic technologies to address these issues. And, of course, ontology can address these issues by what we were discovering in our conversations, everything from formal ontological analysis to improve your data, the way you view your systems and your systems with systems, the environments of your systems, and, of course, internal, external parts of your systems. We've basically touched on that a bit. And then things such as parts and wholes, theory of essence and identity, what kinds of things, properties remain constant, what is the identity of something that's part of another thing, and when does it lose its identity, or when does it its identity changes? And theories of dependence, qualities, obviously composition, constitution, parts compose something, but those parts in turn may be constituted of material that's not parts per se. This is like the statue of Venus de Milo. It may be marble, or it may be clay, which is the constitution relation. It's not, the arm is a part of the statue, and so forth. We're getting at the theory of function, and teleology is brought in sometimes, which really basically looks at natural systems as if they were being designed for purposes and functions. Touching on pragmatic intent and use, social and organizational roles, the semantics, what's the relation between the semantics and ontology for systems? So we haven't barely touched that. And of course, you know, change in time. How dynamic do we want things to be or need to be? Final slide is, ontology can contribute much to systems engineering and engineered systems, especially from this perspective in terms of increasing semantic interoperability from the get-go. So complexity will only increase in our semantics, and ontology is a lever. Okay,
so,
thank you.
Thank you, Leo. We believe you. Both your suggestive solutions and the areas in particular. So our next speaker is Victor Ogoskin.
Okay. Thank you for invitation to speak here. I would
present probably a quite simple view. And that will be the view from the very special segment of the market. You know that here in Russia, we're working with engineers who are not very advanced in usage of such things as ontology and indeed integrated modeling. And while it's quite simple to remain at the frontier in your research, whether you are in Russia or anywhere in the world, for practical engineering, it's very difficult, really, to be on the frontier, and it requires big efforts from engineers. So the people here, who are probably not as advanced as elsewhere, they really are place some hopes, and probably it will be interesting to see, to start from what these hopes are. The next slide, please. These hopes start from the very basic things, things about which the engineers and managers, they read in the papers. That's about data integration, data interoperability, systems integration. But later on, when they move on, they understand the benefits which arise from the use of ontology data modeling. They start hope for better data models, data model reengineering, and better data models become one of the very interesting points and very interesting hopes. People start talking about neutral formats for long-term data storage, which is really quite crucial for companies with life cycles of 60, 70 years. People think of what will happen later, what will be with their computer applications, and they understand that ontology approach and neutral data models can really be obtained on that way. People start thinking about merge between this information kind of modeling and classical simulation modeling, and they start hope that single unified model can be obtained on this way, the model which can be really simulated, which can provide you results on your processes and on human-computer and human-hardware interaction, that everything can be modeled really in this single environment or at least in the single framework. People are thinking, and when they hear about it, they start cheering and asking when they will obtain that, about automated verification of their designs, of their design decisions, and generative design. And everyone is waiting for computers to really help to computer-aided design to become really computer and really aided, so that probably some decisions will be taken by computers. So these are many hopes, and it's while it's very simple to see grounds for these hopes in all the frontier research, it's still very difficult to show even ways to get this in reality. Next slide, please. Really, the model complexity grows with the growth of our understanding. And while we change from old modeling technologies, from paper models in all the aspects from design and the maintenance, and when we are starting asking questions whether these new models, in which sense these new models will be simpler, really more simple to work with, and in which sense these new information models will become more complex than the old paper models. And some engineers, they are very comfortable really with the old paradigm, with the ways to work with paper. And so they are really asking what can be done with the new information models. Okay, we see your promise, but they will be better if they are really more complex. And are you prepared to work with a really complex and unified model? Everything is in the computer, and probably what will we achieve, and are there any real hopes to work for this advancement in information modeling? Next slide, please. We started showing real examples to people, to engineers, and we are working with ISO 15926 data modeling with all the ontology decision already made, with upper ontology ready and reference data published, and with all the basic decisions from 4D approach and everything. So we just start developing the models to show what real results, what engineering domain models appear when you just take one, probably advanced, controversial to some people, but really ready made ontology. And what happens when you start working with that? Is it enough to have, is it enough for what we have in ontology domain to obtain really useful engineering results? On the following slides, I have two diagrams which are very, really, very basic. Only basic objects and relationships are shown. We're just starting answering questions. What are the objects of design, procurement, and operation, maintenance, life cycle, stages, how they are related? Next slide, even not do not approach question on whether what processes are, what the objects we are talking about, what they do, how they do it. The first model is a simple model which is probably good only for educational process, and it shows very basic relationships for understanding and communication between people, and helping IT engineers to develop their systems. It shows some very basic relationships between tag and the actual physical objects in four stages of life cycle: standardization and supplier catalogs, analysis and preparation for the design, typical design stage, particular design of particular plant, procurement for a particular plant, and plant operations. And even at this simple stage, we can show some quite complex mechanics of ontology approach, like temporal part of an individual, like complex classifications, like two-layer classification with classes and classes of class. And this is a good starting point. But when we start working with the real data, even the real data integration process, we see the more complex diagram, which is the next slide, please. And we see that complexity of the model, complexity of the real business application starts growing when we just approach to making the full meta model for a particular system, when we add all the necessary classification and all the necessary classes of relationships added to the model. We see that something really huge network, really huge semantic graphs starts to develop, and then people who are working with that, people who are trying to, who are doing mappings from that neutral model to a particular models of some IT applications of computer-aided design systems, of product lifecycle management systems, they start asking questions about real complexity and real benefits of moving up the complexity level for the real projects. Next slide, please. The next stage is when we move from ontologies for the product to ontologies which are required for the life cycle of our system of interest. We see that besides the ontology for the equipment, for our plant, we need ontologies for rules and restrictions, ontology, including ontology for law and regulation, which is quite different from ontology for rules and restrictions of engineering, of design rules and restrictions. We need ontologies for specific ontologies for processes, and these ontologies again can differ between design, manufacturing, and operational maintenance lifecycle stage. We need ontology to describe agent interactions if we are willing to really automate some workflows and some complex issue management systems. We need ontology for ontology versioning. During the life cycle, we cannot be sure that ontology will remain not changing. And again, we need system of systems ontology, which is many times mentioned in this our forum. And so all these ontologies have to be integrated with the system of interest description ontology. And then the question is, a single upper ontology enough to show all these, to integrate all these domain ontologies? And we see that, for example, 15926 ontology, upper ontology, which is really good for the plant and for the engineering process, and for the process, for the process plant, has some problems, and there are some very big questions when we start applying this upper, using this upper ontology to integrate human interactions, processes, and ontology versioning, for example. So the question is there a single upper ontology to build, to start building all these particular ontologies? And is there a single language? Is a single language available to integrate all the above? And next slide, please. There are many questions, many requirements from the language, and even from the simple examples which we can obtain in applying ISO 15926. We see that we need reified and classified relationships. We need the hierarchy of class of class, class and individual. We need the first order logic for to be incorporated in our language. When we start working with requirements and when we start working with law and regulation, we see that we need model logic and quite complex variants of modalities to reflect all the necessary, all the particular characteristics for engineering requirements and for legal requirements and for compliance requirements. And then we approach the question whether we need higher order logic for some very interesting requirements, some very interesting some ideas, some requirements which we meet in paper now. We see that we cannot express it in simple first order logic languages. And next slide, please. After we see all of these complexities, we start thinking about tools. What tools can be made and integrated or written anew to allow working with all these complexities. And we see the need for a real workplace for ontology engineer, which we start calling process of product lifecycle management or for ontology engineer. And it includes different capabilities from different areas of knowledge management, and it requires natural language processing for once we start working, once we start departing from old paper-based knowledge repositories, we more and more need of producing some automated way to extract concepts and requirements and decisions from our legacy paper repositories. It requires visual and text-based editing, and it seems they have to accompany to be developed together, like in contemporary computer programming languages. Both are required, probably for the single language, like language workbenches. We really need the ontology workbenches to work in all the different representations. Complex semantic graphs require semantic search and kind of pattern matching and heuristics and complex things which become possible now with current computer power, but which again require integration in this environment of an ontology engineer. And the question is when we will have some useful reasoning capabilities in this environment. And all these have to be brought together for the work of an ontology engineer. And the next problem is that ontology engineer have to again connect his workspace, his the decisions, connect them back to the world where people are working in some legacy systems or in some new systems developed for domain specialties. And again, some natural language knowledge repositories, adapters are required, and connection to all the legacy data warehouses is required. And if we are start talking about operational maintenance or computer aided manufacturing of a new generation, generative manufacturing, then we require adapters to the new now fast developing world of sensors and effectors, of robotics, and all these domains have to be integrated back to the workspace of ontology engineer to have his results useful and used by domain specialists and by system stakeholders. Thank you. That's all I tried to explain. Thank you
very much. That was a very good analysis, and it certainly your analysis fits with what I have seen. So we do appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Chris Partridge. Is Chris now ready to go?
Hi, this is Chris. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I can't see my slides. Are they, do I need to do something to my, okay. Yeah. Well, I think you've got David's slides up. Oh. I'll talk to David's slides if you want.
Okay. You're coming up.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's no problem. It'd probably be a better presentation if I talk to David. Okay. The theme of it's a big topic that we have, and really I'm trying to maybe make some I don't know whether they're major or minor points related to complexity. I saw that Victor mentioned this problem of, are we complex enough? And for me, that in the work that I do, that's a topic that comes up a lot. And I think the little cartoon on the right hand side is meant to say that if we don't really master the level of complexity we need for these systems, then we're not going to be able to work with them. So I think that the choice is pretty stark, I believe, in terms of if we want to work with these. So if we could go to the next slide. I'm just going to take a topic from system engineering. I'm not a system engineer, as will become apparent when I start talking about it, but I work with system engineers. And there's this notion that there's been a lot of discussion on recently in the lists of systems as systems. And I think I'm going to use it, maybe a slight parody of it, to illustrate this problem of whether things are complex enough. And then I want to look at some IT issues within system engineering. And in a sense, the first one is system interoperability. And I just want to piggyback on what Giancarlo said in the last presentation. I think his presentation was good, and I think it's key. And then I'd like to introduce a new topic, which is, of course, semantic legacy modernization, which I think is about inheriting complexity. And it, I think, is one of the ways in which we can address the question that Victor asked before I got a chance to, which is, how do we deal with these high levels of complexity? If we can go on to the next slide. Just a clarification, the topic talks about big systems, and I think really what we mean is complex systems. A simple system can be big in size, or a very big system in size can be very simple. And a complex system, I mean, maybe the human cell can be pretty complex. So I think that this it's not the size per se of the system that's an issue. I believe it's the complexity. And the thing I would like to look at today is a systems of system approach, or rather probably a slight parody, a simplified version of it. And at the center of, at least as it's been explained to me and as I've seen it on various different projects, so systems of system approach, is the notion that you can divide complexity up. You can divide it into various portions, manage the complexity in two parts, in the various systems that are there, and then the interaction between the systems. And one of the things that the implicit assumption is this, is that systems are to a large extent nested. And as I think in one of the later slides I'll show, this has a long history going back to Herbert, Simon, and Sciences of the Artificial. And what I want to suggest is that this is actually a false assumption, and we're actually dealing with systems that aren't really as complex as they need to be, or we're taking a picture of the system which is not recognizing a certain degree of complexity. And the issue is whether there's any natural nesting. Go on to the next slide. It's something that I'm familiar with this topic for ages, and I wasn't really satisfied with the way I articulated it. And then I came across Bill Wimsatt's work, and particularly this particular book, and where he actually put his finger almost directly on the point that I want to make. So if we can go to the next slide. If you want to find out more about it, please go back to the source. The point that he was making here is that in the early days, is what people to realize is that a system can be viewed from the high-level point of view from a number of different perspectives. And the decompositions that you get aren't the same. And he says later down, one of the things to look at is whether the boundaries are spatially coincident. And if you go on to the next slide.
Can you also call out the slide
number? This will help people who are accessing later to get in sync.
Okay. Thanks, Peter. I'll try and do that. I'm not sure I put numbers on all of them, but yes, okay. So this is slide six. And he's contrasting here I presume it's a fruit fly, and a lump of granite. And he says there are various decompositions. He's saying various decompositions on the left-hand side. And one of the things you can just see is that the decompositions are spatially the same. Some go deeper, some go not. But every time that you get a breakdown, you get the same spatial decomposition. So if you were going to try and analyze the rock, if you broke it down to those parts and analyze the parts and then analyze the way they interact, you'd be getting a pretty good picture of the lump of granite. But the point that he's trying to make about the fruit fly is when you start trying to do your decomposition, it's the different decompositions break down in different ways. So which one do you choose if you're trying to get your system of systems? There doesn't seem to be a preferred choice. Maybe depending on your interest, you might choose one over the other, but if you want a complete picture, you have a problem here. So this breaking down into at least a nested system of systems is actually a way of hiding or avoiding or missing out on the complexity that seems to be found in complex systems. If we can go on to slide seven. He also makes the point that this has got a history. Herbert Simon makes puts forward a theory that where he suggests that things should be broken down into this hierarchical structure, as he says, to be nearly decomposable in a nestle manner. And he suggests this is the most effective way of doing things. I think Wimsatt's argument would be that, well, if we actually look at these systems out there in the real world, they aren't like us. And that's certainly been my experience. So if we can we move on. Slide 8. My concern is that the system engineering practice, as it says here, of nesting systems into this tree-like hierarchy may reduce the complexity of the design framework below what is required to be able to build the artifact. And I certainly get that feeling sometimes in the systems that I work on. And the thing that I noticed as well is that if you have a discipline of ontology, certainly when dealing with the semantics, then you actually have another way of addressing the complexity without this need to, if you like, attempt to divide and rule and fail. So can you move on to the next slide? I think, at least, again, in my experience in system engineering, and certainly in the system engineering projects that I work on, IT is taking a larger and larger part, or semantics is taking a larger and larger part. And so my experience might not be directly relevant on projects where there is not a lot of IT or a lot of semantics. And to my mind, there are two key areas, as I said earlier. The first one, I think, is semantic interoperability, and Giancarlo dealt with that last week, so I'm not going to touch on it. The next topic is that I'd like to raise is semantic legacy modernization, and I think of it as a way of inheriting complexity. So we can move on to the next slide. If we look back, certainly from an IT perspective rather than necessarily a system engineering perspective, from IT perspective, most of the methodologies and the tools that are around today were developed when we were dealing with greenfield sites where there was no existing software applications or systems. The situation's now quite different. It's very rare to come across a particular area where there aren't existing systems. And in a sense, using descriptions that come from the construction field, we're actually in a brownfield site where there are existing software application systems. And we don't really, at the moment, have a great number or great deal of tools for dealing with them. However, it seems to me, at least, is that the existing systems contain an enormous amount of investment and enormous amount of complexity that can be inherited, provided that you can separate out the semantics from the implementation. And that's the key issue. Slide 11. One of the problems I see is that we need to move away from this notion of rebuilding from scratch, the greenfield mentality. Historically, it's the way we're doing things, and move to a different way of doing things, because the kind of complex systems that we want to build, or let's put it differently, the kind of complex systems that the systems we have at the moment have evolved into, the currently large legacy systems, are so complex that rebuilding them from scratch is just, from a cost point of view, is just prohibitive. So we need to find another way of building this complexity. And I think one way of doing this is recouping the investment in the legacy application. And ontology is one way of dealing with this. It's one way of being able to separate out the semantics in the existing systems from all the implementation. And I think there might be one more slide, or is that the last one? Yeah, that's me finished. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chris. That was very good, and I certainly, again, agree with the fact that most large-scale engineered systems are not done from a clean sheet of paper. There are most always integration of legacy systems, so I think that's very to the point in terms of the way system engineering actually works. Thank you. So the next speaker is David Leal. David, are you here? Okay, well, thank you, David. We're looking forward to this. I'm pleased to hear you.
So I think my presentation naturally follows on from the immediately preceding ones, because I'm sort of talking about one very small part of the problem, which is the engineering analysis area. I'm just talking to the slide saying, what is engineering analysis?
And it's
quite an important part of the engineering discipline, but is far from fully integrated in it at the moment. And we're certainly struggling with the integration of engineering analysis with other parts of the engineering design environment. And this is a problem, because engineering analysis is becoming very important for the certification of products. That there's plenty of products where you fly them or you operate them entirely on the basis of results of analysis. And also analysis is becoming much, much more important in taking decisions about design optimization. It's much less something which is done at the end of the analysis process, at the end of the design immediately before production. It's done much, much earlier to select designs, to optimize designs. So it's becoming more important, and yet it's still far from integrated with the rest of engineering. And I'm trying to think what the demarcation is. I mean, the final bullet is a bit contentious, but, you know, if you're trying to solve Poisson's equation, the chances are that it's engineering analysis rather than systems engineering. If you go on to the next one, which is just a picture. Yes, this is the sort of thing we do. It's immensely complicated. Lots of different disciplines and lots of different physics involved. This is just a picture of the crash test simulation. If we go on to the following one, we're starting to think about what are the problems. Certainly, the amounts of data generated are just very, very much larger than other sorts of simulation, mainly because there's a pressure to get the results more accurate, which means finer discretization. And therefore, any computer system which you have is likely to be filled up with the engineering analysts. They will just use up whatever storage is available to them. The other thing which is important, I think I touched on it before, is that engineering analysis is likely to be safety critical, that you will be doing things which you can't replicate on the test rig. And therefore, although it's a sort of, in some ways, a little bit of a backwater to the engineering design environment, it's absolutely crucial. And the other point is that the validation becomes very, very important, because when you've done an engineering analysis, there is the question is, are these answers correct? And you have to prove that the answers are correct. In the nuclear industry, the nuclear inspectorate, they will come out and they'll look at your analysis and say, you know, take a number at random and say, right, prove to me that this number is right. What is your audit trail back which proves that the analysis processes are correct, that you have correctly predicted the right environment, that your material properties are correct? And there's a long, long audit trail back to ultimately to testing. So if we can go on to the next one, which talks about distinctive problems of engineering analysis. No, I've done that one. Go on to the next one. Cottage industry. Engineering analysis is a cottage industry because it tends not to be routine, and so that a lot of the disciplines which the design people have imposed upon them have not been traditionally imposed on the engineering analysis in the engineering analysis environment. And this is, it's partly because it's much more in terms of often the scientific investigation. You're investigating failures. It's not necessarily known before you start an analysis what analyses need to be carried out. And therefore, the process is potentially unpredictable, and maybe also carried out by subcontractors, or increasingly often component suppliers are told what analysis information they need to supply with their products, and then this analysis information is then integrated by the OEM, so that the problem of flows of analysis information is becoming more difficult. And the other thing which is quite important is that all attempts to standardize analysis data have previously have failed. And I think the previous speaker mentioned we're thinking of neutral formats and single unified models. And for analysis data, we've been trying this for more than 20 years and have not been getting very far. Whereas geometry standardization and product structure standardization has gone well, standardization in the traditional of analysis data, finite element analysis and computational fluid dynamics and all that sort of stuff, really hasn't taken off to anything like the same extent. So if you can go on to the next slide, lots of activities, lots of players. There's no need to look at that slide. It's merely that there are lots of people involved here, many different tasks, including test houses, component manufacturers, material manufacturers, their records. They also do tests. They also supply test data along with their products. All are part of the mix. Go on to the next slide mentioning NAFEMS, that the analysis side of the industry is starting to be aware that there is a problem and that analysis is sufficiently important but is not being integrated in the rest of the world, with the rest of the world. So we'll go on to the slide after that, which is problems. And part of the problem is a sort of consequence of the sort of cottage industry aspects of it all. And analysis is absolutely crucial to the product, but what you end up with is a text report. There are some pretty pictures in the report, which are, you know, pictures of fields, and really and truly, they don't play much relevance other than pretty pictures. And you've got lots of terabytes of data in files scattered here and there. Lots of people have worked on the analysis. And actually being able to link the conclusions in the report back through a chain of activities, which is justified by the data in these files, is really rather difficult. It exists in the minds of the analysts and perhaps in some notebooks or some Excel spreadsheets, but it's not recorded formally anywhere. And of course, it soon becomes a problem with, okay, we've done it now, what do we archive? There'll be all sorts of analyses which were dead ends, didn't contribute to the report. How do you filter those out? And how do you make sure that the right processes have been carried out? It also means that things get repeated. But there's two aspects. If you need to do more analyses, can you pick off where you started, carry on from where it was done before? And the answer is probably no. And also, you lose expertise in that. If you're doing an analysis again, there aren't really the records of how it was done before and who did it. And indeed, whether or not they got the right answer when they did it last time. So these are seen as problems. We can go on to the next one, which is doing it better is not difficult. I think this picks up, on Chris's point that we need to separate the semantics from the implementation, because what we've actually create in an engineering analysis process is lots of files in lots of proprietary formats, which are very efficient and very tuned to the applications that use them, in which most of the information in there is just images of fields. 99.9% is images of fields. And what there is are small scraps of information about load cases and states and the semantics about what those fields represent. And so merely extracting that information as sort of metadata and saying that these big files just are images, and just treat them as images, and saying these are images of fields which are objects which are linked through to the product structure via states, via features, and via the part decomposition. That itself is going to make a major change to the business. And I think most of that is done. The terminology used by engineering analysis might be slightly different from the rest of system engineering, but the concepts are not different. And so extracting information inside legacy files and making them visible outside with respect to a relatively simple ontology will be an immense step forward in just improving what legacy systems do. The other thing is utterly trivial, is recording the sequences of activities. It's trivial, but again, activity types, there needs to be an ontology of activity types that are carried out by the analysts. There's a little bit about metrics, which is the next slide, which is that there's an immense amount of data hidden inside these gigabytes of files and only accessible by and large through the legacy software that created them. You don't want to, these are field representations, you don't want to do anything other than keep them as binary and represent them as concisely as possible. But there is important information which can be extracted, like what is the range of values, making a judgment on whether or not a particular file is important doesn't require looking at the gigabytes of data in there, but what is the range of temperature values or stress values described in this file? All that can be extracted. The final point I want to make is about decisions, that the engineering analyses are being created in order to take decisions about products. And there's a process here which creates images. And essentially what we have at the moment is very often essentially a manual process which goes from these representations of these fields and turns them into some particular statements about the nature of the product. And these statements are then the basis of decisions about how and where the product can be used. And so separating out the decisions which can be and should be stated precisely with respect to an ontology from these enormous sets of binary data, which are the descriptions of the fields from which you extracted the information necessary to make the decisions.
That seems to be a key part of it.
And so my summary of this is that we actually have a cottage industry based on some legacy systems which are 30, 40 years old now in many cases. And that the ability to do better is actually within our grasp. And it's very much a question of extracting the semantics from these legacy files, leaving the legacy files where they are, and representing the semantics separately with respect to an ontology so that we can manage the existing data that we create. So I think that's where I've got to.
Thank you, David, very much. Certainly, my sense of things is that the analysis, it becomes increasingly important mainstream system engineering. So I totally agree with you that. And I also agree that it hasn't yet, the practice of it hasn't caught up with what it needs to be, and that that's a very fruitful place for ontologies. So thank you very much for that. And we'll move on to Elisa. Are you?
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Great, yes.
I'm going to take a very different tact to what other people have presented, in part because I figured that the territory would be well covered. And I want to talk about a few things that we thematics are seeing with clients now that will require an entirely different perspective, both in terms of how one designs systems through the systems engineering process, and with the amount and diversity of data that is produced when such systems are designed. So slide two, please. One of the things that I haven't heard people talk about and that I think is really important for us to consider and that may provide more immediate requirements for ontology as well as requirements for data management that are incredibly huge is that people are designing systems now and have been for a couple of years that phone home. So examples are some of the consumer electronics that we're seeing, smartphones, tablets, computers, and other things, that a number of large manufacturers have been designing that actually collect data on board and ship them back to the manufacturer. And that data might be used for a number of purposes. Traditionally, it's been used for analysis of problems that have been detected on the device. But if you think about what's happening with smartphones today and with some of the search engines and other things that people are doing, we've actually been hired by, we meaning Thematics, have been hired by a couple of different organizations to model user data. And I was approached in December at an OMG meeting by a Gartner Japan guy who was working with a very large Japanese automotive manufacturer. And that organization manufactured not just cars, but other kinds of vehicles. And they want to collect user data, sensor data, that they develop on board the vehicle and ship home for a variety of purposes. That information may provide number of cycles on a part. It may provide information about whether or not some odd occurrence has happened and they can alert the customer to a service requirement. It may mean that they're tracking where the person is for various reasons, whether that be to find a vehicle once it's been stolen or simply to understand user behavior. And so there are others that we've run into that are doing the same thing, whether these are in the automotive industry, whether they're in the agricultural industry, whether they're in consumer electronics, and even one organization that builds not only consumer electronics but large appliances that are saying, look, there's all this data we could be collecting and analyzing for a variety of purposes, and we need to be doing that, and the way to do that, we believe, is through semantics. We cannot connect the dots and provide new services or provide new capabilities or do new analyses on these things that we're building without the embedded semantics and without semantics in distributed platforms worldwide, in fact, in order to analyze and reuse this content. So what's important to know is that, yes, we've been talking about systems engineering and engineering of all of the data that's related to the design process, but I would argue it's not just the design process, it's the entire life cycle, and now we're talking about content management based on stuff the devices that are already deployed and in the field are sending home, and whether you use that in order to upsell new services to your customers or whether you use that in order to develop new requirements for downstream products or whether you use that for marketing purposes or something else, people are doing this now, and there is a demand that's emerging now for semantics that can address not only organizing this sort of content, but repurposing it once you have it. Slide three. So I just want to leave you, and I'm going to be very quick because I know that we're short on time, with some sort of provocative requirements. Not only do these systems have onboard sensors that are returning data and phoning at home, but they're building in, these companies are building in higher level processing capabilities that take the low level sensor data, aggregate it up using semantics in some cases to create more rich events, for example, that they could be using as a basis of other processing. And then they build back-end systems, and these have to be distributed worldwide based on privacy laws of the various countries that they operate in, collect that data, process that data, in many cases anonymize that data, but reuse it in a very large-scale processing, highly distributed, in order to deliver new services and products to their customers. And so I think this is an area where the semantics are being used today that we haven't addressed in terms of the big systems, big data problem, And this is where we're talking about huge amounts of data that you're collecting from devices, especially if they're cellular phones or computers, that people are wanting to do analysis on the back end, has to be distributed worldwide, has to be anonymized based on country requirements, has to be aggregated in various ways so that you can actually use the content once you have it and model your users appropriately or model the systems appropriately. But it leaves the door open for all kinds of very large-scale ontologies that I don't think other folks on this call have addressed previously. And so I'm just going to leave it at that and sort of dangle some ideas out there and want to just build onto your pile of systems engineering requirements to say that you need to build systems that can provide this sort of data collection capability from the outset. The processes that you need to create for systems engineering are evolving in order to accommodate this sort of thing. And then the lifecycle management of this, of the systems changes based on the analysis of the sensor data that you're getting back. And what you do with it downstream is dependent on having architected it in from the outset. And so I think this is an important area that this community and this summit could address if you wanted to do something a little bit novel.
Elisa, thank you very much. This is a very valuable contribution. We haven't talked about this very much, but you're absolutely right that there are a lot of artificial systems out there that are using semantic methods and ontologies to do whatever it is they do. And that's certainly something that needs to be looked at. And I do make a suggestion you'll see in a few minutes of turning one of our kind of thread ideas into something closer to that.
That would be great.
So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. So I'm going to proceed. Peter, if you'll get up my charts, I want to kind of set the stage for the discussion a bit.
My thoughts are up.
Okay. So what I think Matthew West suggested some time ago, which I totally agree with, is that we want to, we've had this discussion, it's been pretty free-flowing, and so now we want to try to do triage on what are the topics that we're really going to pursue. And what Matthew suggested, second chart, is what we want to identify for the threads, or potential threads, is triage them on the basis of where are their solutions already available, if you know where to look. Now, I've found a lot of times that there's stuff here that I don't know where to look, or the space out there of looking is so large. As an engineer, I find it hard to sort of grapple with it. And this is, let's say, stuff about parts and so on. And there are other cases where there are problems that require significant research. In some cases, this research might be things that could be begun within this summit. And in other cases, we couldn't possibly do anything within this time scale. So we might as well take those off the plate for this summit. Not that they're unimportant, just that we won't be able to do anything with them, and we'll probably divert us from doing the stuff that we could. So what I'd like to see us do is I want to review what some of the emerging threads that I have seen, and I know I've missed one or two, and from that, and it will have some very personal comments on it, I'd like to use that as a starting point for the group to decide which ones we want to take, which ones we want to delete, add, and how do we might want to focus them. And even more important, I'd love to find somebody to volunteer to be a thread leader. So I'm going to push on to the next chart, which is what I've tentatively called just composite system modeling, which is all the stuff about parts and components and roles and stuff like that. And again, you guys may not agree with this breaking up of things. That's okay. This is just a first cut at trying to bucket things. so we can discuss it later. I'll just push through this, and then it will be up to the chat room to try to figure out how we actually focus this. And again, this is one place where we really need a triaged list of references suitable for engineers. And I think we probably need to or could identify things which are not, which we could do that are probably not in the literature. But who knows? So moving on to the next chart, system descriptions for different uses and such as design requirements and design. Anatoly's presentation and references address this, and there's certainly a lot of current engineering discussion concerning this topic, like how do you formalize requirements and can they be embedded as ontologies really within system engineering languages and so on. And so well, this puts a different perspective on anything he said, I'm not sure, but this is one of the topics areas where we are one of the potential threats. Moving on is one thing that's come up that there's a, been pushback on, and that's the whole idea of the success and relevance of semantic issues in engineering. The pushback has been that, well, this was covered last year, and I'd like to push back on that, at least personally, that marketing ontology is not the same thing as establishing where their success is and doing an analysis of the failure and doing an analysis of what conditions might drive their success. And this is a really a great concern to engineering decision makers. And so whether we want to push on this one or whether we want to drop it, that's up to the group, but I do want to make that point. Next chart. There's been some discussion about the distinction between natural and artificial systems, and as such, I think that's not, it may be hard to make progress on that within this time frame. And this is the one I mentioned to Elisa. As an alternative, you consider that the idea, let's say, for example, of discussion of rules of engagement in war, which is circumstances under which it's okay to kill somebody or not okay or mandatory that you kill them. Well, artificial systems are doing that. They're making decisions based on the ontologies that they have embedded in them. And this has a lot of, this is current engineering. It's not the systems that Lisa mentioned, but it's the same problem, or same issue. And it has obviously a lot of legal and moral implications. So this is just a suggestion of a way to focus this. I don't necessarily want to deal with war systems, but that's a kind of call that we may want to see of whether we want to focus something there about systems that are using ontologies to do things. So the final chart is semantic interoperability. Giancarlo has posed ontologies as reference models of, you know, consensus to provide bridges. And while this is true, and I also got some of this in Leo's talk earlier, which I completely agree with, but one needs more specifics about how to actually deal with the levels of abstraction, different terminologies or different axiom sets for different ontologies and so on. So again, I've seen a lot of this. But where do we want to take it? Can we take it further than we just have? That is, from my point of view, something to take back to engineers. You know, what kind of hierarchies do you want? What do they look like? How do we build them? Stuff like that. So that's really relevant to solutions, not just an articulation of the problem, which I think we've heard very good ones. That's the end of my charts. I mentioned that certainly system of systems should be there. I found a lot more discussion on that I think is very interesting. And so that's yet another potential track. So what I want to do is, Peter, do we have some moderator that can help us take these candidates or other ones and sort of take for each candidate maybe what people think about which ones we want to actually take and how do we want to focus them, or any other suggestions for focusing. Is anybody here, is Matthew here that can moderate this?
We could start asking, and since you've thrown out a few, asking the, we can do a quick poll by show of hands on which ones people would want to look at, or we could ask people to suggest their top three priorities, and then we call that combined list and see what floats to the top.
I mean, again, I picked those not because they were my choices, but because I found significant stuff as I tried to comb through the chat and the email messages. So that's why they're there, not because they're good, better, or otherwise than others. So
maybe that's a starting set.
We could ask the participants here whether they have additions to this set that are compelling.
Or do they want to take any off of that, just simply because
I think
we need to focus.
So maybe based on those, we start with the people on the panel express some opinion. The panel today includes those who just briefed us, plus those panelists who were with us last week. So
yes. So perhaps the panelists that with us last week might weigh in as well as to what they think. What they think. Again, we had an initial list, which is on the site, and I showed that on the first chart. And then and this represents the sort of current pruning or whatever of this. And so just by the way, an answer to a chat question, I am suggesting that we hold off on further discussions of natural versus artificial and replace it with artificial systems that use ontologies to do things, if we want to go in any direction like that. Of course, I'm not saying there's no difference between natural and artificial ones. I'm only saying that I'm suggesting we either take it off or refocus it.
Okay. Show of hands from the panel. I guess we all know about the hand button. So taking in that order, Natalie, and then Giancarlo and Leo.
Great. Let them speak.
Right. Since we wanted an extended discussion among all the participants, let's try to keep each remark to within like a minute or at the most 2 minutes. Would that be okay with everyone?
So, and Natalie first. Star 7, please.
I think that...
Yeah, we can hear you, yes.
Please make sure we can hear you first before you go on. That's important. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. And I should remember that one of the goals, it was community building. And we have several tries to gather engineers and ontologists. For example, in Systems Engineering Challenges conference 2 years ago at Moscow, and in our Russian INCOSA chapter, and we study that it should be not only ontologists and engineers, but also methodologists, because engineers cannot expertise to speak about what they do. There are special people from, for example, situational method engineering field, and they can describe methods. What is method? An ontologist can describe when they submitted what should be described. And engineers, they simply engineer. And they like a fish not seeing the water. And we try to do this, and we have a community here in Russia, about 100 people, then try to mix all this. And in our discussion, I not listen yet about community building, and listen only about systems engineers and ontologists. It seems to me this is insufficient, and we should invite other people that will just professionally describe what do systems engineering. And after this, we should ontologize this. And I know that several people familiar with ontology from situational method engineering, but it should be maintained specially and intentionally. Thanks.
Fantastic. And also, for each person who has made a remark,
please document that onto the chat, because that would go into the proceedings, and these are very valuable inputs.
So, Giancarlo? Can you hear me, Peter? Yes, go ahead. Okay, so I just want to make the
my explicit vote to two of the topics transformation. One is the issue regarding composition, roles, functional roles, social roles, functional dependence, functional parthood, and so on. I think this discussion is very important for systems in general, so the issue of functional parthood, functional roles, and parthood in general, and dependency, functional dependence, is very important for any kind of engineering system. And then for the case of particular engineered systems, which are social technical systems, I would also include the case of social roles and normative descriptions and so on. The discussion on this was very active on the mailing list, as you know, and very fast. So I guess this would generate a lot of discussions and would also be very important. And my second vote would also go to semantic interoperability. I think this is also a very important issue, and that's also connected to the discussion, the first topic, and one that we can, I think, achieve something in actually progressing on something on the discussion. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you again, Giancarlo. If you could document
that onto the chat, that would be great.
Sure.
Leo.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, good. Thank you. So concerning a couple of these items on Henson's list, I think, first of all, semantic interoperability is not going to go away. You can basically assume that part of that is going to be addressed by Corey's federated systems, since integration and interoperability will come into play there. So that's a cross-track focus. So it may mean that we have one step into these tracks, and then another step into Corey's track. Concerning the artificial and natural systems, that's a complicated question. I think for focus purposes, maybe we should focus on artificial systems, and then hope that some of the things that we come up with will also apply to natural systems, kind of by a fiat teleology or something like that, where it does seem as though natural systems provide functions and have purposes and design qualities, and maybe that's very close to artificial systems, or at least we can map from artificial systems to that. So it is a way of I think, naturally focusing for this effort. That's it. Thank you.
I'm going to break in. I quite agree with that as a way, and that's certainly consistent with what I was sort of suggesting with that topic. Also, just for the speakers we've heard so far, I really need, I hope that some of you will pick up as champions on some of these threads. Thank you. I think Jack was...
Yes, Jack is next, but someone just typed
into the hand button place. So if that
Peter.
Person... Yeah, that would retype into the normal chat space. That would be great. So, Jack, *7, test your voice first.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I think semantic interoperability is the most important on this list, and that, particularly across the full spectrum of a system lifecycle and all the different kinds of decision makers that get involved. Regarding the refocusing, I think that it's not all that fruitful to prowl into natural systems. On the other hand, the big gap right now in systems engineering that I am seeing is the inability to appropriately model human beings, the behavior of groups in decision making, etc. To date, most system engineering has considered the human to be outside as the operator of the system. But more and more, we have to design systems that contain 2, 3, 10, 100, 1,000 human beings as active components of the system. And we, right now, there's not very much information on how to characterize the endogenous and exogenous attributes of 2 or more human beings. Thirdly, on the question of what's going on now and solutions ready available, of course, SysML and Doug Dory's OPM, which is being used, I think, over in the process industries, are reasonably well along, but they really need to get more formalized ontology underneath them so that the expressions in those languages are less ambiguous. So that we can apply automatic integrity assessment to the models that are produced. Secondly, though, in terms of new stuff, I think that neither of those, either SysML with Modelica and or OPI adequate provide for modeling context-sensitive systems. So we need to look at something more like OPEMCSS and see whether or not that would be useful for people who are required to get into autonomous interacting swarms and where one system affects the configuration of another system. That's all I have.
Thank you, Jack. Yeah, please help document that. Also, Leo, we still missed the earlier post that you made in the other box. Anyone else from the panel wants to weigh in? If not, let's open the discussion to all the participants. Looking at the refined list, additions, subtractions.
Does anybody volunteer to lead a thread? That is, collect the material relevant to it and organize it. That's what we need.
So maybe let's review the threads you have. It's got composite system modeling, system description for different uses, relevance of semantic issues in engineering, and then a alternative set the alternative something we want to talk about, or the alternative isn't something we want to talk about either. Hansen. And then semantic interoperability. Okay.
Peter?
Yes.
I'm not on the SOAP Hub, so I can't raise my hand. When would it be appropriate to make comment, Ravi here?
Okay. Go ahead, Ravi.
I'm thinking loud, looking at what Leo said, and when are at least the automated ontological systems semantically ready to interoperate? So what are the preconditions to be defined for them to have the same context, same vocabulary, similar kind of understood objects, similar kind of predicates, so they come almost on the same page to be able to interoperate? Has that been documented, or at least attempted, so that we can collect those papers and put in the thread under semantic interoperability?
Hansen, you want to take that one?
Not to my knowledge. That, again, if I'm understanding, sounds like what I was suggesting for the replacement of real versus natural systems, that that's a good area of ontology to look at, that I don't think has really been looked at very much, but there's a lot of examples and use cases and data that it would be easy to do something there. That's, as I said, that's not under the topic of semantic interoperability. I'm not saying, of course, these topics are mutually exclusive. I'm just saying that, and I don't think we should worry about whether they're mutually exclusive even. That can work itself out later.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm again looking for a champion that will take something like this and help focus the discussion on those things. Also, just a comment about semantic interoperability. I know that's cross-track, but there are specific areas in engineering that are a little bit different than, let's say, just large data management. And so that's why, while it is cross-track, it does deserve a thread, in my opinion, for system engineering, which, of course, should be, cross-tracked. But I don't think that just having it as a cross track will get what one really needs, and I've certainly heard so much relevant to that in engineering. And like Leo's suggestion of the using these hierarchies of ontologies, which is, I think, absolutely correct. But it's just that we have to get somebody, or I would like to get somebody, to take this forward a bit in this context. Right, to take the next steps, not just keep talking about the same thing.
So you mean new discovery, new collection of research, or what do you mean when you say take it to new level? Do we at least set some parameters? Let's say talk of only systems engineering and semantic interoperability. So what are the kinds of complex systems that have same semantic base, similar semantic base, so they can be considered as candidates for interoperation?
Well, what you have is, I'm sure, is that Anatoly and other people have noted, is that current system engineering languages are somewhat weak on semantics or ontology. However, they have a lot of overlapping concepts which desperately need to be reconciled using bridge ontologies. And so one can, if nothing else, look at some of those use cases
and make some real suggestions about the nature of bridging ontologies for, you know, for important use cases in engineering. They're probably useful everywhere, but at least focus it to on some specific use cases. That's an example of the kind of thing that I'm, you know, would like to see happen out of this. Just one example.
So how would those systems be represented? Would they be like in any particular language you have in mind, or like systems engineering can use varied notations?
Well,
enterprise architecture itself has variety of notation, process notation, data notation, information notation.
So, for example, take the enterprise architecture stuff there, and take UML or SysML and notice where you want higher level stuff that's done in the system enterprise level, where you need to then transfer that or map that into lower level design stuff. So that would be a use case of where you take two language, not only languages, but also they have their, domain experts and so on. That is, there's a context of usage. And you look at how you would do the translations are where, when people use the same name in both contexts, they make terrible mistakes because the meaning is implicitly different.
Well, that's what I think was at least a prototype of that is the ODM of OMG, where Elisa is Elisa present, then she can comment much better than me. But it attempted two different notations, like OWL and UML, to interoperate with each other.
Well, that's a more detailed, I agree, that's the kind of thing that people, that engineers really need now.
Okay, I think it's a worthwhile thread to follow, and I fully support. I don't know how much I know to be able to contribute, but certainly I can assist in aggregating documents and things like that.
Great. Who is this talking?
Ravi Sharma.
Okay, well, that is, again, all I'm saying is there are wonderful opportunities that I think that we could do something with in the time frame. Of course, we can't solve all the problems, but we could make real concrete steps that would be clearer to both communities how things go in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're on the chat room, I'm not sure that you are, but if you are,
no.
Please are.
I cannot until I
email. Use the email to do this.
Yes, I mean not in real time now, you mean?
Anytime.
I will do this this evening. I will send you an email.
Great.
Yes, send a mail to the Ontology Summit mailing list.
Yes.
I believe you're on that list, Ravi, are you?
Yes, thank you. Yes, Peter, I am.
Yes, okay. Thank you. Also, in regard to Steve Ray's suggestion, that we put it somewhere on the wiki so that we could all look at and view and edit and so on. I have put that those few things that Hansen has listed in his slides onto the Big System Engineering Community input page. I've pasted that link, so if people could go there, and then we could start maybe making some progress. So
yeah.
Ravi, you're suggesting championing the item that would be number six, right?
Number six is, I'm going to the wiki and checking. I can get on the wiki, but not on the chat or on the CNC.
Yeah, if you go onto the wiki, find the place that says Ontology Summit 2012 Workspaces, and there's a page called Big System Engineering Community Input. If you find that page, it's at the lower part of that page.
Okay. Right. All right. I mean, I will.
And that's corresponding to number six slide number six on Hansen's slides.
Oh, today. I see. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I have the slides downloaded so I can look at them directly.
So I will put down candidate champion Ravi Sharma.
Well, which one now?
Number six, which is the in lieu of the natural and artificial discussion, you want to discuss the rule of engagement. And in particular, Ravi is talking about semantic mapping.
Yes, and also what Ravi said is very relevant to the interoperability stuff.
Mm.
That is what I was thinking, yeah, primarily.
That's what I was thinking that what he was saying was really close to that. Again, I don't care, it doesn't matter, it's just so long as somebody does something.
Okay,
so
I'll move you to item number seven then. Semantic interoperability with a special emphasis on semantic mapping.
And I would certainly think, though, that there would be a lot of people that would be interested in crafting some version of number six. Doesn't have to be rules of engagement, but it's just the fact that systems are using semantics to take actions and and this is, there's an immense amount of stuff that is very topical, as we've heard.
Yeah, Leo has his hands up for a while.
Very good.
Yeah.
So let's go to Leo.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that, a number of us are interested in semantic interoperability, and it'll be at least partially covered by Corey's track, but again, it's probably worth a focus here, so I'm glad that Ravi has stood up for that. I'm interested in it myself very strongly, and I'm sure that Giancarlo and others are too. It's just that I won't have very much time at all to assist in that, except encourage people.
I'd be happy to work with you as champion, and would be really benefited by your even periodic vision sharing.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
So, Peter.
Whatever.
And I have a question to Rio on this topic itself. Has there been a compilation of predicates by either order of importance or by saying minimum set required or something so that we can say an ontology is ready to be semantically compared or a collection of systems are semantically reasonably complete to be interoperable?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very difficult question.
Yeah. Or even complete. Like, what's the minimum set of object types and relationship types?
I don't think you can actually characterize it in terms of a minimum set, at least yet, because...
What I think happens is you look at, let's say, the enterprise terminology, and you look at the kind of system engineering terminology, and you have to look at where the terminology overlaps and where you need to transfer one from one system to the other. And so you will develop a bridge ontology for those specific purposes. It may be not so complete otherwise, but it will allow communication. It's a federated way, a way of federating communication. I don't have to know everything you're talking about, but it's the things that we need to share. We need a common, we need common concepts and common semantics.
So the concepts and semantics would include more than vocabulary sharing.
Like, oh, absolutely.
It is terms and vocabularies is one level of sharing. It's the process sharing, or is it relationships have to be sort of predefined and agreed? Because if you remember in your
at
talk...
At some level... I think so. That is, the model for me for an ontology is a formal ontology, which means that it is represented by axioms. So this means that, which gives a precise semantics, you know, inference semantics and reference semantics. And that allows you to talk about, you can use that as a basis for integrating the concepts. That is, what axioms? What do we assume about some particular concept? You know, and how, what are the inheritance hierarchies in that relative to that concept, for example?
Mm-hmm.
And Ravi, I can give you another simple example. In the federal government and obviously other places, there's a whole interest in communities of interest, where
yeah.
communities form in order to share data. And to share data, they have to agree, first of all, on vocabulary and the data that they want to share. But behind that, they have to agree on the meaning, or at least have that meaning represented.
Yeah.
So in many cases, that's very hierarchic. It's everything from universal core, for example, to, you know,
NIM.
Lower level common cores to very specific domain cores.
Yeah.
But it's more than vocabulary. It has to be, you know, semantic representation so the machine can assist the people.
So it is also like not only the person's person-related attributes, but also relationship of that person-related attributes as well.
Yeah, I mean, for example, you know, if we have systems and we have a system engineer, and we have a software engineer, and we have a three kinds of end users. You know, they're going to have different perspectives on that system, and they may have multiple systems they have to deal with. And to do that, they have to have some sort of common representation to ensure semantic interoperability across their perspectives, but also across the systems that may be more focused on. On one audience rather than another.
So, I mean, it's very similar to, let's say, an information exchange packet document. Similar
yeah,
concept
it's similar.
raised to semantics of the system level. And then say this package defines enough intersection among these three types of people to share information or share ontology.
Yes, and it's not just people, but, you know...
In your example, there were people.
Right, in my example. Yeah, but see, it's in order to do other work, right? So if you're a human resources system, you have to provide information perhaps to a logistics system or a allocation system for projects. So in effect, that may be three different... systems, but there's common core information that has to be shared, and it has to be shared semantically.
Yes, and even
yeah.
even the domain-based information, which is sort of common at the intersection of these systems, can be used to intercommunicate among systems, at least as far as data information are concerned. I don't know how process reuse would work, and how relationship reuse would work when we talk of semantic operability.
Well, let's delve into that on the mailing list, since you're championing the discussion thread, so that would give room for discussion. Jack so Ring I'm has
go to up. Go to Leo, just to FYI, Peter. I'm but, go to Leo. Right, I agree.
Well,
thank you.
Well, I would suggest you take the lead because I'm not, and I'll help you, but I don't really have a whole lot of time.
And yeah, and,
okay.
and Leo is the general chair of this summit, so we need him to sort of guide the entire summit forward.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, Jack. Star 7.
Yeah. I'm concerned that I haven't heard anything about cybersecurity today, in fact, in the announcements. And I can tell you that out there in the system engineering world, people don't really understand what cybersecurity is all about. They're seriously in need of some sort of beginning ontology to begin sort of to begin a little information exchange.
Maybe.
Well, let's say, Jack, I would agree with you, but it seems to me that we already have too many interesting topics on our plate.
I don't dispute that. The question is whether or not priority.
This may be something you want to convince the track for champions to put that onto the domain application agenda. We're barely into the tracks. I mean, this is just track one and two. And we have got track three, track four, cross track one, cross track two to come.
Okay, well, to sort of summarize, I think it seems to me that we're going to put out that list that Peter has already put it out on the common group for that track one and two, and we have at least one candidate. We have one person who has agreed to sort of be the point of contact or the shepherd or whatever it is for the track on semantic interoperability. And
if you refresh the page, you've also got Amanda volunteering the cross track A1 to address at least some of the slide number 5 issues.
Okay, great.
Very good.
So, while we have the entire community here, you might as well, let's focus the next few minutes on identifying people who might champion the other main threats that you have identified.
Great. So, Amanda is going to be a co-champion for the success and relevance.
Yes, through their track, which partially addresses fitness of purpose, quality.
I can't overemphasize how important this is from the engineer's point of view, from the point of view that if I go back to senior management and say, I'm going to be asked these questions. And let's say the ontologist R2. And so what is the... Do they have good enough answers for this? Okay, moving on. What about who would be able to, I've heard in certainly the presentation, and you can feel free to rename composite system modeling. I was just trying to lump a lot of the stuff that Giancarlo and Nicola had talked about, as well as other people. I mean, like including Matthew West and all sorts of other people, as to just simply the language of describing systems, in this case, more artificial systems, but I don't know, I think it applies to other ones too, but at least let's start there. Is there a champion there?
We can volunteer Giancarlo since he's gone.
Great.
I'm just kidding. Anyone else? Steve has his hand up.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Yes, Beth, go ahead.
Actually, I'm responding to the comment that was made earlier with Amanda's volunteering, which was that I am, as the Track 4 co-champion, pushing my candidate speakers to address the very questions that Henson's put on his slide, on that slide, whichever slide number it was slide number 5, yeah, which is I'm asking them specifically to try and focus on where were their successes, where were their failures, how did you measure them, what lessons were learned when they are presenting the use cases. So that issue, Henson, which you've been raising, is, you know, the kinds of questions you're being asked by the customer are exactly what I'm pushing the speakers in Track 4 to address.
I think you have just signed up as well for this one along with Amanda.
It's dual use, I guess, so in that sense I could.
Dual use.
Right.
Now one thing, so, I'll comment on this one for you guys, is and I also responding to an email. There are a lot of things that I know about that have to do with successes and failures, but the companies will not tell you, as I think you will certainly understand.
Yes.
They don't want their failures to be known in some cases, and in other cases, they don't want their successes to be known either.
Right. In fact, I will say one of my speakers may be talking about an anonymous company who is his customer.
Yeah.
And that's fine with me, because actually that might be easier than for him to talk about the successes and failures.
Exactly. So I think this is great, because that's the way that I think that it has to be approached.
Right.
And so I'd love to, so you guys are signed up on this one as well as, you know, the more general form of it. And again, for the, you know, let's say like semantic interoperability, is since that's kind of cross-track in various ways, I think it would be great for to have Corey or anybody else work with the chair of that one. And have the composite? Did you sign up somebody for that?
We signed up Giancarlo. I mean, maybe.
I think you can do an immense
good Chris
job on that.
Chris or David Price probably would be great champions.
Chris Patrick or David Leo.
I'm sorry. David Price, actually, I'm thinking.
Any of those guys would be great to me. And do we still have this ontology of as used by systems? Do we have a champion for that? Or do we want to drop it? Again, not because it's uninteresting, but just because we can't proceed unless somebody will take up and try to organize the whole thing, find out what's relevant that's out there, and help working with the whole lot of us to see what we might do to push the discussion ahead.
May I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Peter, is there a mechanism where people can do this, respond to this very comment offline? Like if some people are not present online and attending, that they can think and say whether they would like to participate in composite system modeling or some other thread.
That would be the Ontology Summit mailing list.
Yeah.
Yes. Would you mind requesting this on that in addition to people volunteering here?
I'll send out a mailing list on that. I mean, I'll send out an email on that tonight. Just restating the things and requesting people to acknowledge that they might be interested in participating or leading.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Just now we were pinging Chris Partridge. maybe he has already left. Chris, are you still there? Or David, in terms of maybe number four, slide number four, the systems ontology.
Okay, let's take this off. I mean, I think we should close it, and I'll send this out again. I mean, I'll send out the email I was talking about sometime later today, and try to get people to respond it. And they can add stuff if they want, or say, you should drop X, that's okay with me, or reformulate it, particularly if you take the charge of it, you get to do basically what you want. I mean, that is directed in whatever way you think is best.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye. Bye.